Hello, I'm Howard and welcome to the 93-20 Friday show, the show that commends West Ham and Brighton for scuppering Man U's slim hopes of Champions League football next season. We've got a packed show as always, and you can probably guess what we'll be discussing as we reach the squeaky arse time of the season. It's Liverpool at Anfield, and I've not even got a pithy comment to make yet, anyway. To do so, note to Steve Tudor, I've got my favourites in. It's Asan and Lloyd. Good afternoon, chaps. Afternoon, Asan. How are you doing?
Afternoon, Howard. I'm so immensely flattered to be in your basket of favourites. You have no idea.
You'll need to listen to the intro to today's Premier League show for that to make more sense for you.
I will indeed. It's on my listening list for later.
More sniping from Tudor. So. How you doing anyway?
Yeah, man. It's been a good week. I think, as I said the other day, when we get to this point in the season as well, I enjoy it. I think for some people, the stress is not fun, but I kind of feel like if you're not in it for the stress, what are you in it for?
The glory, obviously. So.
Yeah, but you can't have glory without stress.
Lloyd, good afternoon to you. How are you doing?
Afternoon. Yeah, I'm good. It's been quite a long week, but we've got Anfield at the end of it, haven't we? So maybe it could be a longer week. Who knows? Let's see.
When did you first start thinking about it then?
Pretty quickly after Copenhagen game. Yeah. Probably full time.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, we're going to get to that. So, but first, as always, in the packed show, let's look back. Now, this is a weekly Friday show. Be remiss of me not to mention the derby for one more time. Lloyd, going to start with you, stay with you. A final word on the derby for a few minutes before we briefly look at Copenhagen and then, of course, do the big preview. Nice, easy tapping for you, Lloyd. In brief, this was a match that displayed the chasm or gulf between clubs. And how long do you think, the answer's obviously yes, but obviously you can expand on that. How long do you think it would take United on the right path if they make all the right decisions to actually come to the Etihad and not feel inferior?
I think, deal with your second question first. I think it's going to take quite a long time. There's some pretty deep scars now on the United end.
Shame.
I know, it's such a shame, isn't it? And actually, I kind of witnessed that firsthand on Sunday, because I watched it in a pub in London, obviously, full of United fans, insert joke, and with some mates who... Manx down from London, and you know they were beaten before a ball was kicked. They were just like, I don't want to get slapped, you know. One of them said I'd take 3-0. So that kind of shows where their like heads are at as United fans. In terms of the game, I mean, because I was watching it in a pub fully United fans, and there was no sound, which I know Asan likes to do to get rid of dull commentary like Robbie Savage or whatever, but I can sometimes find it a little difficult to pick the temperature of the game without any sounds. So I was initially I didn't think the performance was as kind of dominant as actually it was, and having then rewatched it the following day, United didn't carry as much threat as I thought, and City were a lot better in the first half than it kind of appeared to me at the time. So actually I was a lot happier with the performance on reflection, and obviously if you look at the kind of statistical side of it, it's a complete whitewash, isn't it? So all in all, very happy. Haaland's miss is kind of the only wow moment, but then I thought his finish against Copenhagen midweek was really good, and a sign that, you know, he's kind of put it to the side. So feeling very good about it on reflection.
Yeah, I know a United fan who said he was happy with the 2-1 cup final defeat. I didn't know what to say to him in reply to that, to be honest. So, hey Sam, were there injuries an excuse for the approach at all of United?
I don't think their approach would have been different if everyone had been fit. No. I don't know who they're kidding if they're talking about injuries. It was the performance of a football club that feels inferior to the club that it's playing. And that's been the same for a decade, more or less now. So it's, you know, I'm amused at the great lengths that people have gone to to polish that turd into, you know, what else could they have done? It's the best they could have expected. I've seen a lot of really wild shouts about what that performance was, when for me, the truth is it was just a cowardly performance. The performance of, if a League Two team came and did that at the Etihad in a cup game, you'd almost forgive them. You'd go, all right, fair enough, you're a League Two team. For Man United, having spent as much money as City over the last however many years, having spent £400-500 million just on this manager, to come and play in that manner is just, it's disgraceful, and they got everything they deserved.
Do you know what it
actually reminded me of, just to jump in? We played Huddersfield in the cup this season, didn't we?
Yeah.
I went and rewatched the extended highlights of that game. I would genuinely argue that United probably didn't carry as much threat as Huddersfield. Honestly, I would implore people, go and watch the extended highlights. Huddersfield, at least first half, kind of pulled together a few counterattacks that actually muster something, muster a few shots. Because, yeah, okay, United had a couple of breaks where they ended up kind of giving the ball away, or Rashford took a poor shot, but they really carried very, very little threat that first half. And obviously second half, I mean, there was nothing, was there? Literally nothing.
Yeah. Well, I'd say Copenhagen posed more of a threat, but then they did finish above them in the Champions League group, so maybe that's a logical outcome and makes more sense. Yeah, I accidentally listened to Talk of the Devils podcast on football cliches. Now, I'm so lazy when I listen to a podcast that I think it was Football Cliches I was listening to, and it ended and just flipped onto this, and I couldn't be arsed reaching for my phone to turn it off. And then I thought, actually, they'll be talking about the Derby defeat. It might be worth listening to this. A lot of it was quite sensible. There was a quite pathetic dig at the atmosphere. One guy, I don't know who it was, saying that he'd been to an African derby the previous week and it was much better. And there was some much positivity that, you know, United did as well as they could do in that, which kind of said it all. And a long discussion on how United fans have turned against Rashford, which really surprised me a bit as well. Or maybe isn't that surprising. But yeah, it was an eye-opener for sure, the way they talked about United and City. And that, obviously, I think they were quite happy with the result, to be honest. Son, as for City, does this match and the transition opportunities early on, before Pep tweaked it and they did not have a sniff, tell us anything about the Liverpool match? We'll obviously do a full preview on that, but perhaps it's a good time to talk about that. A derby, the isolation of a derby day win where City were dominant, does it actually tell us anything as we go into another big match the following week, or does football not work like that?
I mean, it doesn't work like that for me. I think there's two separate strands to that. I think at the risk of boring the pants off listeners that have heard me on other podcasts this week, I think that we've become a little desensitized to the reality of what a football match is. There is an opposition team and they are allowed to shoot at our goal. And it is perfectly normal over 90 minutes of football for the opposition to have a chance. That's just football. And so the kind of, you know, if this happens, then this happens kind of thing. I always find that a bit weird. Like, you know, if the keeper doesn't make that save, if he makes that cross, if he picks the right decision in that moment, that's literally football. When you do the right things, you score a goal. And when you don't do the right things, you don't score a goal. So it's pretty pointless going, if X and Y come together and coalesce in the right way, then we could have lost that game 2-0. Which is, I've seen a lot of that. I saw a lot of it after Bournemouth and it made me uncomfortable. I saw more of it after United and it made me even more uncomfortable. Well, because
for a team like Bournemouth, they do create chances, but they're lower down because for that reason, because they don't have top-class strikers up front or things like that. So it's not that you shouldn't expect them to have chances against you, a team like Bournemouth. It's more that it would be normal for them not to take as many of them as the top side. So, yeah, it's not a weakness as such if a team like Bournemouth would create chances against you. And United might be crap, but they are sixth, Aeson. They are a team.
Yeah, but I think one of the things that we have to, one of the things within, when, and this applies to all football supporters, I imagine, that do stuff like we do on the Night 320 pod, right? Which is that you tend to view your team through a very narrow prism and you very rarely give it the right context. The truth is that if you watch 90 minutes of Liverpool or you watch 90 minutes of Arsenal or you watch 90 minutes of Chelsea or you watch 90 minutes of Spurs, they'll miss big chances and they'll give up big chances because, again, that's just the ebb and flow of 90 minutes of football. It's not a computer game. It's not, you can't eliminate all risk and you can't eliminate the idea that players will not make mistakes. So it's, you can, the only thing that you can really judge on is the result and the underlying numbers. And but in both cases, with Bournemouth and with United, the underlying numbers and the result were overwhelmingly in City's favour. So any hand-wringing after that, or any, if X happens, then Y happens, just pointless. And the other thing, just very briefly, I want to say is, seen a lot of people say, well, you know, if City play like that against Liverpool, newsflash, they're not going to play like that against Liverpool because Liverpool are not going to be sat that deep. So City's defensive line is not going to be pushed halfway into Liverpool's half. Like, it's just, the game will not unfold in that manner. That's not, I think it's more likely that City will play like they did at the Emirates. I think it's more likely that City will be a lot deeper than people expect. And they'll be, Edison will be very comfortable going long to Haaland and to KDB and looking to build play from there rather than trying to play through their initial press. So they'll just be a completely different game. So there's no point in comparing. There's just the very little point in going, if we play like that. Yeah, exactly. What is that expression that I keep reaching for? If you, that's it.
If you had balls.
Exactly. Thank you. That's the one I was looking for. If you hadn't had balls, you'd be your uncle. It's a little bit, that is, there's a little bit of that going on in some of these conversations.
Lloyd, like rain on your wedding day, the irony of me saying this is not lost on me. Sometimes we don't get the chance to celebrate a Derby Day win. There is an over-analysis of everything, you know, that I've just alluded to, asking Aeson that question. But this was a game where, you know, when you outshoot the opposition nine times over and dominate the ball, and they would have been desperately happy to have a draw, that you just have to appreciate how wonderful days like this and how many great days we've had like this as well on Derby Day in the last decade. But I also wonder, as an aside, you know, if that pass had been better, if that, we probably missed so many that applied to City themselves in this match and many others. We don't look at the nearly moments for City because we score so many and create so many chances.
Yeah, true. Although Haaland definitely thought that his was a nearly moment because he's definitely spoken about it, hasn't he, in the press, which I think is great actually and underlines, I think, why his mentality is so good. That he can acknowledge that and take the piss out of himself. I think that's to his credit, really. But no, what's the point in looking at nearlies? I mean, we won 3-1. I'm just gutted I wasn't there because the piss taken from people I've spoken to in 115 of the United fans was absolutely god tier.
That was a beauty of the third goal as well. It gave you the rest of injury time to absolutely enjoy the occasion fully. Though, it showed in a way, Lloyd, how bad they were, that the party probably started as soon as we took the lead, in a way.
I think it did. Well, and I spoke to my brother and he said the only problem with the third goal is you turn to take the piss out of the United fans and they weren't all there. A lot of them had gone.
Yeah.
You're taking the piss out of the seats. So, yeah, unreal. I'm just annoyed I wasn't there.
Yeah. Ah, well. Hey, son. Total left field question here. POS is in the news again this week. I think I've found an advantage for it. It's finally clipped the wings of Behemoth, have I said that right? Like United, who could spend freely and replace one expensive failure with another for a decade. And suddenly, they don't get to do that anymore, do they? And that, in a way, just shows how the system they helped set up has helped Yeah, well, they've eaten themselves in a way, like other clubs around them.
I mean, I'd be careful about saying stuff like that, because I think United could easily sell a couple of lads from their academy for 50 million quid, and that probably put about 200 million onto their potential future spend. I'm just not a fan of those rules at all, in any way, shape or form. The way that they've been set up in such a way that the whole thing just feels very political and very PR driven. Because the reality is, and then this is a kind of wider business point rather than even a football point, like, inward investment into any industry is a good thing, right? And when you begin to chop the legs off inward investment in the way in which the Premier League are currently trying to do, they are, so like, for any business, it's like a shark. It's got to keep moving forward. The moment it stops moving forward, it dies, right? The moment at which the TV deals plateau or begin to drop, the Premier League will slowly begin to die. And one of the things that I think is happening right now is that there's this kind of, we find ourselves in a weird moral place with football, where a lot of the conversation around football is about the good of the game and morality and what's right and, you know, level playing fields. And there's a lot of buzzwords and a lot of stuff that's used around football, and 99% of it is either a lie or it's massively misplaced. And so when you've got profit and sustainability rules where, like, the Palace owner said the other week, and I can have £1 billion in a wheelbarrow, but the rules prevent me from spending it to build my football club. There's just no world in which that's acceptable, and there's no world in which that represents a level playing field for absolutely anybody. All of that stuff for me is just lies. And so you land in a place where what they've done is they'll say things like, oh, but you can spend it on the infrastructure. You can spend on the women's team. You can spend on the youth academy. And it's like, okay, so I can spend in all of those places that won't manifestly improve the results that matter in terms of moving up the league to earn more money. Fundamentally, any football club is only as good as the team that it puts on the pitch. So if you tell a fella that he can't compete with the top six and he can't buy players as good as that because the rules prevent him from doing that, you will see a slowdown in the inward investment into the Premier League. And I'm looking at the league and I'm going, what are you doing? Because La Liga and Serie A and the Eredivisie and all of these European leagues that you're so concerned about don't care about you. They want you to die and they want you to fail. And you have to ask yourself what the direction of travel is for the league right now. And I don't think it's good. And I don't think it's just about the rules themselves. It's about the unintended consequences of the rules. If the season ends and you don't know who's been relegated because Forest and Everton's points deductions haven't come through, that's a farce. If Leicester are going to get promoted but are then going to get a points deduction, that's a farce. If next season Chelsea are going to be up on charges and they're going to have a points deduction, you're going to have another three clubs like Villa having to sell their best players this summer to fall within the rules. The whole thing becomes a farce. And who's benefiting? Look, I'll be honest, we benefit. United benefit. Liverpool benefit, Arsenal benefit. Us four clubs, it doesn't matter to us. A lot of people from other who support other clubs, particularly those other clubs, they go, well, you would say that as a City fan. No, I shouldn't be saying that. Believe you me, privately, Man City will be in favour of the rules. You know why? Because it stops other people competing with them. It's normal. It's completely normal for business. It benefits
them now, yeah. Successful teams. I'm not sure a peer PSR, I did say PRS earlier, bloody acronyms. I'm not sure it is favouring, that's my point now. I'm not sure it is favouring United now. I think because they're not successful. You know, I tried to say that with a straight face. if they don't get into the Champions League, I think it's fine. They finally reach that stage where they can't do whatever they want anymore.
You're right.
And that's quite funny. I agree with everything you say. But that one aspect of it is hilarious.
Definitely. And I'm sorry, I took you off on a mad tangent. I'll let the show go back to running the show.
Don't worry, the whole agenda's been done off your tweets this week, which have been very entertaining.
So. Excellent.
Yeah, Lloyd, what do you think? As an aside, I mean, it is nice to see other fan bases finally wake up to how the system works, does it not? But yeah, I mentioned this in the agenda because, as Asan said, Leicester City may join the Premier League with a points deduction.
It's a farce, isn't it? I agree with pretty much everything Asan said there. Fans of other clubs have definitely woken up to it now. The coffee is strong. It's been brewed. They can smell it. And the thing is, do I feel sorry for them? Like, some of them, but like, nah. Not a lot of them, really, to be honest.
And Leicester were failing at FFP when they were winning the league, but no one cared because it was a fairy tale. So
Exactly. No, honestly, very little to add on what Asan said there. So I'd agree with pretty much all of it.
Right. It was just another angle to laugh at United. So, yeah.
Well, it's true, actually, because Stefan made a good point on kind of Chelsea, which is that now that they're out of Europe, you know, same as United, they're really struggling revenue-wise because it's so lucrative to be in the Champions League and it gives you such an advantage, those four teams above and beyond the rest.
What did City make? 130 million, was it? Last season?
And every game, if you win it in the Champions League, earns the club a lot of money. So I think
next season,
could be Conference League for United.
Yeah, next season, you don't even fall in. You can't fall into the Europa League as well, I don't think, under the Swiss model. Though I assume most teams that fall out of the Champions League don't want to anyway. I know a lot of United fans didn't want it this season because it'll just be further embarrassment down the line, no doubt. Anyway, let's move on. Asan, we'll be brief on Copenhagen because we did a review and let's be honest, dull as dishwater did come up for the second half. but this is our weekly Friday free show, so I'll spend a few minutes and I'm going to, in a minute, focus on something different than we didn't do for a lot of the review, but we couldn't have had much of a smoother night, could we? Only Nunes' fingers could have been smoother, but the night as a whole couldn't have been. Not a dig at Nunes. I would hate that. It looked disgusting, to be honest. Mate, so I do a feel for
it. It was hanging. It was almost the perfect night. I think the Nunes thing is a little bit frustrating. I think also the fact that Doku seems to be injured, although we'll see from Pep's press conference whether he's available for Sunday. I think those two things aside, it was the perfect night. Felt like we didn't have to exert ourselves, felt like we played in first or second gear. Perfect preparation in a way for Liverpool in that everybody gets a little bit of minutes in their legs, but at the same time, you've got on the bench the lads that you want to see on the bench. So Bernardo, Phil, KDB, Ake, feet up, lovely. John Stones, feet up, lovely. Big game incoming. That's exactly what you wanted to see.
Lloyd, you were on the review. Is that how you saw it? I'd said at the time, the game had to be dull. Once it was 2-0 up after 9 minutes with Liverpool, at this time of the season with Liverpool next, in a way. I mean, I saw a few Blues criticise, you know, that we didn't actually try a bit more, just passed it sideways, especially second half. But really, dull as it was on the night, and it was, and the atmosphere was dead, because there was no zero jeopardy. In a way, that's what you wanted to with Liverpool coming up.
I loved it. A kind of boring, non-eventful, no injury win. That's exactly what you want. Rodri knocks, gets up the 60th game before we go to Anfield to break the record. Then he's hauled off at half time. Haaland scores. Perfect. I think my only key takeaway actually was Oscar Bob's a serious player, and I think he's going to start a few Premier League games between now and the end, even though.
Right. It's in the agenda, Lloyd, so let's segue straight to him and off you go. Because I wanted to talk more about how Rico Lewis and Bob did, because, you know, so feel free to continue about what sort of game he had and how well it bodes for the future.
Yeah, so, I mean, he obviously gave the ball away for their goal. Naturally, there were a couple of loose moments, but I think his technical ability is on such a high level. I think he's probably, I'd put him in, this is going to be a big shout, I'd probably put him in the top five for kind of technically how good he is of all our players. he's just so comfortable in those little pockets when he kind of moves in between the lines, is why I think he will end up playing centrally. Said that at the beginning of the season after a couple of cameos. But I think he's here, you know. He kind of arrived with the goal at Newcastle, but it wouldn't totally shock me, for example, if he started away at Anfield. I don't think it'll happen, obviously, but I think he's in that bracket now where if it was, I'd be like, yeah, I'd be cool with that. I'd be all right with that. So, yeah. And I think Asan tweeted in the week, you can save us a lot of money, I think, particularly if the idea is to kind of bring Savio over as well. That seems like a good plan.
Well, yeah, as I said, this whole agenda is off Asan's tweets, and he mentioned Bob. So, Asan, over to you. And the follow-up question is, yeah, do you think his progress will change our transfer policy this summer?
Yeah, I think it will. I think his level is way higher than anybody could have really expected. I think we all had high hopes, but he's really, Foden's the only one that has come through in the manner in which Bob is coming through, where you kind of look at him and every performance you go, oh my days, I've seen more than enough.
Yeah.
I'm more Definitely. Than convinced that he is going to be a huge footballer for City. And I think that in terms of when you look at the window next summer, the only decision they have to make is where they want to play him, where they want to develop him next season. And that will decide where they buy a footballer. It's funny how, you know, we names, so Florian Wirtz, Jamal Musiala, yeah, João Neves at Benfica, obviously slightly different player. But my point is, you hear the names of all these wonder kids and you read about how talented they are and how good they are. And I think you can sometimes a little bit lose sight of what's right in front of you. I dare say Oscar Bob's as good as any of those three lads that I've just mentioned. So when I tweeted Oscar Bob's going to save us a lot of money, it's because we're not going to have to go out and buy one of those lads because we've got one of those lads.
High praise indeed. Lloyd, what is his ceiling? The reason I asked if you've seen enough is that's why I've hung fire. I haven't seen, well, I hadn't. When he first burst onto the scene, I hadn't seen that much of him. So I'm still kind of hanging fire. But do you see a ceiling being right at the top from what you've seen so far?
Yeah, I think I've seen enough, you know. I think he's one of those players where you don't have to watch him for that long to get an idea of just how good he is, because he's such a kind of technical player, and he is so good kind of drifting between the lines and doing basically one of the hardest things in football. To me, it's just quite apparent that I think he's, you know, he can start for Man City. I mean, that's about as good as it gets for a footballer at the moment in the world, doesn't it? So we'll kind of leave it there.
Well, leaving it there, what about Rico Lewis then? Are you surprised he struggled for game time this season? And how did you feel he did, Lloyd, in the match?
Well, Walker's had Pep's nudes on speed dial this season, hasn't he? So that's probably not helped Rico. But yeah, I mean, it's probably been a bit of a frustrating season for Rico because, you know, he was probably our best player in the group stages of the Champions League, maybe with Phil. Because he played in midfield a lot. He spoke about that in terms of that's where he kind of sees himself now. But then really outside of those games, he's not played that much in the league, has he? So I think it's probably related to Walker because obviously he did kind of play more as like a right back, didn't he, the other night, which actually did surprise me a little bit. I thought he'd play in midfield given that's where he played. But he's still so young, so there's not a concern. And Walker's age is, you know, I mean, he's not getting any younger, is he? So I think he just needs to be patient. But the bottom line with Rico is whenever he's in the team, you don't flinch. And I think he always does, you know, a solid job whenever he appears. You need players like that. You know, not every player that comes through your academy is going to be Phil Foden. You know, they're the unicorn. So I'm very happy with Rico.
Mm. good team. Jacob Wright, ace, and second, he came on as a sub against Huddersfield. About 20 minutes, I think. Remember, if I'm right. Does getting on as a sub in a couple of games mean anything as it chances at City to you? Obviously, you won't have seen enough of him to make judgments yet, but do you get excited when in a situation like this, when someone like Murphy comes on, or is it too early to know if they've got a big future? Obviously, just getting on as a sub in the Champions League game from Pep still means he sees a lot in this player.
In terms of his actual quality, I tweeted it this week because he's had a couple of little cameos, and something about the way that he moved really impressed me. So whenever a kid like that comes on, you want to watch them as closely as you can. And the thing that jumped out straight away was that he reminded me a little bit of Gundo in that it felt like his head was on a swivel. He was constantly looking around him at what other players were doing. And then he was moving into space depending on where players were moving to. And then when he received the ball, so firstly, he wanted the ball. It's always nice when a young player comes on the pitch and demands the football. So he was demanding the football. And then when he got the football, his passing was crisp and it was sharp and it was not passive. It was very, just very aggressive. There's something about that kid at 18, even just his kind of his gait, like the way that he's not really tall, but he stands upright. There's something about his stature that made me just go, oh, well, I really like the look of him. And so I tweeted it this week, and a few of the under 21 regular watchers came back to me and went, yeah, he's got big potential, big potential. So yeah, I'm just really excited to see. I think somebody said to me, he'll definitely go on the preseason tour to the US next summer. And I think that'll be a big thing. Obviously, with Rodri, we have got one eye on a deputy. I guess the Calvin Phillips thing will be over in the summer because they'll flip him somehow. And in an ideal world, you don't have to go and buy a player. You've got Kovacic and you've got somebody in the squad as well who can maybe, you know, have a similar arc to Rico Lewis in terms of making enough of an impression to make them a decent option in the squad.
Is that not the perfect solution? You can't...
100%.
For Rodri, that is. You can't have a big name signing to be a deputy or to fill in or to be an alternative. Having a youth player come through who's not going to be kicking off if you don't have 40, you know, games a season is the perfect solution.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
Well, fingers crossed.
It's the way he shields the ball as well. It did remind me of Gundo. He kind of, a couple of points where he just stepped over the ball, muscled the Copenhagen player out of the way, just used his body to kind of position himself and then give the pass. It's quite, I don't know, it's quite rare. It definitely caught my eye. Good potential.
Yeah, right. There's another round of games. Lloyd, I'll start with you. I'm going to guess at these last eight a bit. City, PSG, Real Madrid, Arsenal are going through. Barcelona, I think, are going through. Inter, Atletico, favourite Inter. And Dortmund or PSV, a favourite Dortmund, having drawn the away leg. Anyone you want to avoid, or you have faith now that whoever City come up against, they will beat? Of course, I'm the only person who seems to hate this. The draw will be for the next two rounds, so essentially the entire route for the rest of the competition is laid out for everyone. Potential route, anyway. Mm.
It's tricky, isn't it? Because the draw for the round of 16, you look at it and you go, God, that's a lot of shit teams. And they're all going to get knocked out. And it's going to be really the kind of best teams, and almost as if the Champions League starts from here. So, you know, all those teams are going to be a tough match. You know, there's no gimme there. Like, Copenhagen is a bit of a gimme. I think in terms of who do you want to avoid, I would want to avoid Arsenal, because you just don't want an English team. It's just got a different narrative. And I think you want to avoid, for me, Madrid, maybe until a bit later. But other than that, I think we have to take anyone.
Yeah. Hey, Sam, are Inter the once more the dark horse here of being underestimated? I know they would have popped up in your Not the Georgian show, because I think they've got a manager as well who's perhaps going under the radar as the future, I say future star, current star, and one who's going to be in demand.
Mm. I mean, personally, I absolutely would not want to play Inter Milan. I think over two legs, that's a dentist trip, that big time. So no, they're definitely the, I actually think they're the biggest ones to avoid, having read and seen how Madrid have performed so far. Madrid almost don't sound as good as they were last season in a weird sort of way. I don't know why that is. It sounds like they're not quite right at a really bad moment in terms of the Champions League. But I definitely would not want to play Inter Milan. Definitely would not want to play Arsenal. At this point, I want the easiest tie we can have. So I'll take the winner of PSV Dortmund.
Yeah, agreed. It's weird, isn't it? You look at that list, Ace, and there's like some huge, potentially difficult, very, very difficult sides. But it's been a season of flawed teams in a way, has it not? You don't actually know what you're going to get in a way. I mean, PSG did lose 4-1 at Newcastle, and they're PSG. Madrid have been up and down, but they'll win the league now, and obviously they've got some stellar players. It's a very tough one to pick. And obviously, Bayern Munich, did they even put them in there?
No, they didn't.
But again, I mean, you think, what a time to play them. What a time to play them, but then you've got, but they have got the players to lead down. You could just see Tuchel winning the Champions League and having totally fallen over everywhere else. It's that sort of competition you don't know, do you? So.
Yeah, but we're in the last eight, so obviously you look at every team and you go, they could beat us.
Difficult. Yeah.
It's just the nature of the Champions League.
It is. Anyway, should we look forward then? Yeah.
Why not?
Hey, Sam, big one, obviously. Nervous? No, you're not. You're just excited and confident, aren't you?
Yeah, no. There's no nerves here. I mean, the game's been on my mind since the 1st of January, maybe. For sure, it's been on my mind for a while. It was always about where we were in terms of form and where we were in terms of injuries when the game came round. I think that for me was going to be the biggest thing. From an injury point of view, Pep has just confirmed that Doku and Nunes, he will decide tomorrow, because they're not training today, they're training tomorrow. Grealish isn't fit, but everybody else is available. So
just to clarify, no City players are training today, it's a day off, so yeah.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
No, just in case someone thought those two weren't training.
Ah, right. No, nobody's training today, it's a day off.
Day off.
So in terms of our fitness, I'm happy. We're in the right place. And then in terms of form, I feel as though we're in the right place, more or less. I think that Stones is getting back to his best. I think we've got the added bonus of a Phil Foden that wasn't the Phil Foden a year ago that is the Phil Foden now. An absolute game changer and a game breaker. Kev and Erling are there. They're ready. Erling obviously played well in midweek. Kev had the break. It's everything feels like a positive selection conversation. There's no negatives within this. And I'm sure we'll talk about Liverpool later, but just very briefly, I think me personally, and I understand that people are different, but me personally, I don't have an inferiority complex when it comes to the Scousers. I don't even have an inferiority complex when it comes to Anfield. They were lucky last year. I don't feel that they are. I think that we've built up in our heads, or some people have built up in their heads, what the Scousers are based on the Champions League and 17-18, right? I think that the 17-18 really is the one where I think that people have convinced themselves that, like, oh no, we can't handle them, or we can't handle Anfield. Fuck that. I'm sorry. I don't want to swear, but I'm going to have to swear. We can handle Anfield. We should be looking to go there and win. We have a better squad, a fitter squad, a better manager, and better players. So from that, if that's the starting point, then there's no reason why we shouldn't be going there full of confidence. So, yeah, I mean, I'm ready for it, bro.
They've got the
Caps obviously out, roped bro. You in to do the pre-match talk, haven't
he? Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Blimey. Yeah, I feel ready for the match now. Lloyd, exactly how you feel?
No.
No.
I mean, I generally don't worry too much about games. I kind of like enjoy like the pressure, particularly of like before United. I know you hate it. I really love it, but Anfield away is the one game that I'm a bit like, Christ. This is probably the most nervous game of the season for me. But we owe them a result there. You know, we've been quite close to it a few times. The last time, a few times we've gone. You know, we obviously scored in the last game. It got ruled out, VAR'd. Cancelo did what he did, and then, you know, he's toast now. I'm excited, and I think we couldn't be in a much better position form-wise. We couldn't be in a much better position injury-wise, although Grealish would obviously be ideal for this game. But there's a lot to be positive about, but it is still Liverpool at Anfield, and we have a habit of shitting the bed there.
I mean, 1-4-1, but obviously there was no one there to see it, so unfortunately, and the 2-2, which we probably deserved to win. But last season, less said the better.
Mm.
Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I'll
do my best Richard Keys impression there. Not very good. Hey, San, surprised how his comment has played out this week? Nice to see City players fighting back. You can tell there's a big game this weekend, can't you?
I mean, I really didn't like what he said. Not because I personally care. I just think it's disrespectful to his professional colleagues. If I was one of his England teammates in the City squad, I'd probably knock him out the next time we met on international duty, because it's just, like Lloyd said, it's just a helmet of a thing to say. It was just completely unnecessary.
We could do with Sterling back to do that, couldn't we, in the country?
Totally. It's exactly what I was thinking. I think the nice thing is he's done the team talk. He's basically set it up, do you know what I mean? Like, they've been asking Pep about it in his press conference, and it looks like they've asked Pep 2-3 times to try and get a rise out of Pep as well. Mate, you're just an idiot. You're just and the best bit is that clown's not even playing in the game. He's injured. So what's he doing on media duties, and what's he doing saying stuff like that? I don't think his teammates that are going to be on the pitch are going to be thanking him. So, nah, it's just, I've never liked him. I've never rated him. Right back, Happy Gilmore. Can't defend. Never a defender. Never was a defender. Never will be a defender or a fullback. It's just, you know what I mean? David Bentley at right back. I am genuinely not arsed about that clown. But it gives the added spice that we need for Sunday to ensure that when Haaland scores his third, he can run past that bench and he can shush them.
Lloyd, over to you. A comment to put on the fabled dressing room wall, definitely. And the response of the, you know, Diaz and Haaland suggested that disrespect that they felt from the comment. Mm.
Look, genuinely, I think...
Or does it just mean more?
No, it means less, Howard. Come on, we've been through this.
Sorry.
Yes, genuinely, I think it's a really stupid move from Trent. I don't know why he's done it. I think it kind of, for me, stinks of arrogance and overconfidence, which I don't know why he would have in this situation. And I think it's a bit of a lose-lose for him from a Liverpool perspective. So I'm quite happy he said it, actually. And I think you can see from Haaland and Diaz's reaction that they're not happy with it. It's definitely going to give them a bit more spice. And I'll tell you what I'm hoping for. I'm hoping for a bit of fucking Tevez doing what he did to Gary Neville in the cup game when he runs up to the kind of bench and puts the hand on the ear. I mean, I want a bit of that.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Right. So you think Lloyd, you actually think, I mean, ultimately, once the game starts, this has no bearing, does it? But in a way, it has focused the mind. Yeah,
I just don't get why
he
said it.
Players.
Yeah, I just, yeah. I think
because he's a Liverpool fan, so he's acting like a Liverpool fan.
It's a lose-lose. It's a lose-lose.
They can't help themselves, can they? Let's be honest.
It's just stupid.
Yeah. Anyway, let's look at the wider picture before we delve into the nitty-gritty and try and pick this side. Eysan, I know you've touched on this already, and no tempting of fate, but let's discuss what's already gone. City, I've seen noted, are better in recent years at dealing with the big away games like this. But do you have to disconnect Anfield game from all the other away games, such as the Emirates? I mean, I'm not sure that it's kind of right. I've seen our attitude change and we can go there without that inferiority complex, but we did lose at Anfield. We have lost at the Emirates. I don't know. Do you feel, as a fan, do you feel different mentally than you did a few years ago when we went into games like this?
I've never had the Scouse inferiority complex.
But the team has, do you think, or Pep's approach?
Yeah, I think Pep's approach has down the years been overly conservative. But I think more than anything, I almost feel as though we won the treble last season, but if you ask Pep what his biggest regret will be from last season, it's probably the team and the setup that he picked at Anfield, because it was poor. It was ill-considered.
They were in a shit moment.
Yeah, they were in a terrible moment, and he built a team around João Cancelo, a fellow who he kicked out of the club 3 months later because he was that big of a bellend. So, no, I think that the way I look at it, right, if we can go to the Allianz, if we go to the Bernabeu, if we go to the Champions League final against Inter Milan, and we can show nerve, and we can show toughness, and we can show like the characteristics that you need to be an all-time top team, not just a momentary top team, to be an all-time top team. If we can go to those grounds and be in those situations and show that mentality, I'm kind of confused as to why people are so afraid of the Scousers or of Anfield. And again, I understand the fact that a lot of analysis or narrative around football depends upon history, that people look back. So people will go, yeah, but look at our record at Anfield. But it's not last year's team that's playing at Anfield. And not only that, but we're a better team in a better moment at a stage of the season where we tend to show our best form. So going in, I mean, I'm not being unrealistic. I'm not sat here going, well, it's obvious that we're going to beat them 4-0. Football is football. Anything can happen on the day. But my point is, I would hope the players themselves are going to Anfield on Sunday going, we're going to win here today, boys. Simple.
I mean, don't matter what we think, does it, in a way? That's the point.
No, absolutely. And it goes, yeah. Sorry, it's one more thing.
Sorry, I'll stick with you, Eysan. We know what Klopp's going to do. So in a way, it is the players and Pep's approach that is key to how this game plays out.
Absolutely. And I think that you can't overstate what last season's treble means. You can't overstate the FA Cup final, the Champions League final, the second leg against Real Madrid, second leg against Bayern Munich. Like, those are sliding doors moments. They are career-defining, team-defining moments, yeah? And the manner in which the team navigated them in the final third of last season means that they can go to Anfield on Sunday pretty calm, just sort of looking at each other going, well, as long as Baldy doesn't do any mad stuff, yeah, like building a team around João Cancelo, we'll be all right here. And thankfully, 9 of the 10 players are going to pick themselves. So, and those 10, or sorry, yeah, 9 of the 10 outfield players are going to pick themselves. And the 9 who we know are going to get picked, they know exactly what they need to do. Everybody knows the job. Everybody knows exactly who they're up against and what they're going to have to face. So, you know, there's only confidence that you can take into a game like this, or coming off the back of a treble and coming off the back of the form that we're in with the fitness of the squad as it is.
Lloyd, the pressure is on the need for a result, in a way. So, not a must-win game, but a must-not-lose game.
Agreed. I think it's a must-not-lose. I think if we lose with Klopp going, the fact they're already in front, obviously by a point, I think it would be very difficult for us to come back from there. I think you'd have to see another probably injury kind of problem for Liverpool. I think if you gave them that kind of nose in front, I think they probably close it out.
Hmm. Well, there is Arsenal as well, but just linked to City. Yeah, you can't see them losing a 4-point lead to City.
I don't think so. I think it would just give them massive belief if they beat us. Mm. Obviously.
Open question. Tinfoil hat on. Hey, Sam? Are you confident of a fair game?
No.
No, not
massively. Lloyd's just muted himself. So.
Yeah. No, not massively. I think it's one of those games where we're going to have to do it properly. I think it's a game that we're going to have to win a little bit by keeping Liverpool at arm's length. Like, I think that the emotional side of it, the thing that people call the Anfield factor, which is actually just the kind of the emotional maelstrom that can be created and how that can then go on to affect officials to a point where, you know, Liverpool can punch a ball in at the back of the net and they'll give the goal, that kind of vibe, right? I think that when you're in that scenario, the best thing you can do is stay calm and win the game as cleanly as you can. And I think that part of, for me, it's absolutely a first half game. It's massively a first half game because I actually think that the longer that game remains 0-0, the more pressure Liverpool feel. Because they are absolutely of the opinion that if they win the game, they win the league. Now, I don't agree with Lloyd. I think that there's just no way, I believe, that they can win. It would be if they beat us and then they won every game between now and the end of the season, it'd be our record of 18 wins on the bounce, so it would probably break whatever the Premier League record of consecutive wins is. I just don't believe it. They're a good team, but you'd have to be blind to not acknowledge that they've ridden their luck so massively in the last 2 months, in the last 2 weeks, let alone the last 2 months. So notionally, I think that a defeat for us doesn't kill it for us. But I think from their point of view, they believe if they win, they will win the league. But they also, having dipped into their, unintentional pun there, having dipped into their kind of media, they believe that they have to win because they are concerned that if they draw, that puts City in the driving seat, which tells you that even though we're sat here with a lot of apprehension, it's their cup final. They think a draw isn't enough and a draw would leave them top of the league. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that leads me to ask Lloyd then. We'll leave the team to last now because all the other topics keep coming up. I'm coming round. I put in the notes like Liverpool always try and blow you away in the first half an hour. But considering their form, if not the results are good, the fact their injury problems and so on, is it possible this becomes actually, with their need to win perhaps as big as City's, for you know, reasons Asan's just said, could this actually be a very cagey match because both managers don't want to lose this game in that first half?
I think it will be, actually. Yeah, I think obviously games at Anfield have kind of been defined mainly by Liverpool just absolutely flying at City. But I think Klopp will be a little bit more circumspect, actually, on Sunday. I think it'll ramp up, you know, as incidents happen and the crowd kind of get up for something, if there's a big challenge or a decision. I also think there's going to be a bad decision that goes against us. It's just obviously going to happen. Like, you know, like the Saka penalty at the Emirates. I just think something like that's going to happen. So we're going to be up against that, which means we'll have to play even better. But they need the win, really. I think a point is a really good point for us. It's not a great point for them. They need the belief from 3 points and beating City, I think. So I think we're in a nice place for this. And obviously with the injuries that they've got, so I think Konate got injured last night, didn't he? Came off.
Well, he hobbled off, yes. I'm not sure yet. Yeah.
Yeah,
he went off in the second half, I think, yeah.
Yeah, the scouts I've spoke to said they think he's out.
It's muscular. That. It's muscular, and so I think that...
It's a trap. No, it's not.
Well, it's difficult because, look, I think the reality is that they've got a lot. They've had a lot of muscle injuries in the last couple of months, and he will be conscious of the fact that Sunday is big, but then, you know, if you throw him in and he pings that muscle, and it's not like it's not going to be an intense game. It's on the contrary, that just the very nerves, the very tension of the size of the game is going to wreak havoc with players' muscles. So I just, I think that they are going to end up with him not starting.
Which lends me to the argument that Klopp may play this one more cautiously.
We will, because I think, look, Salah's probably going to start. Salah's probably going to start, but he's not going to be 100%, is he? They're going to be putting him in because they need him, because he's done us dirty so many times down the years. I think he does expose probably the big flaw in City's setup. And so I think they will take that risk there, but Salah's not going to be firing all cylinders, and he's often the one that has defined the kind of back and forth nature of these games, hasn't he? So, and look, Kanate out, I think, is a big blow for them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't represent that. He's a really, really good player, and is someone that can definitely match Haaland, like, physicality wise. So whoever they have next to Van Dijk, I think Haaland will be peeling that side.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I think that sort of, it's an interesting one, because when you say it like that, I do sort of agree with you, which makes me wonder whether he does take the risk, whether they do, if they feel, well, you know, maybe they say, okay, well, don't sprint. So stay back, be cautious, but mark the kind of the edge of the penalty area, or 5 yards outside of the penalty area, just patrol that zone.
He's going to be taking risks with probably Szoboszlai starting, Endo starting, Salah. You know, they're probably all going to start. So do you want to throw Kanate in as well if he's got a injury problem? I mean, you could blow your season there.
But it's shit or bust for Klopp. It's shit or bust for Klopp, because it's not like he's got next season. It's now or never. I think there's a little bit of, I think it's quite interesting, and I guess we'll never know, but it definitely felt to me, because basically, if you look at it, Nunes got an injury, got rushed back, re-aggravated it. Szoboszlai got an injury, got rushed back, re-aggravated it. Trent got an injury, got rushed back, re-aggravated it. Salah got an injury, got rushed back, re-aggravated it. That says to me that Klopp might be playing a bit loose with the fitness of the players, because he knows that it's kind of his last throw of the dice. And so it almost, like you've not got another chance. So there's no point in being cautious. You may as well just go for it.
Just as well, he's got the best backups in world football and the best youth academy in world football as well. So he'll be fine. Right, let's end with trying to sort out the team, Sam Lloyd. You asked Twitter, Sam? I think the more I look at it, the more the team presents itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll start off and then you can comment. Edison, sticking my neck out there. Walker, Diaz, Stones, Ake. Now, obviously, there is a question or two there, but that's what I think makes sense. Rodri, KDB, Haaland, Foden, obviously. Leaves two spots, but then I realised I hadn't even put Bernardo in. So it leaves one spot, which really, I think, goes to Kovacic. Would make sense for me. So, Lloyd, I heard you say, kind of nodded in the background. That side makes sense for you. I guess the only questions there are positions of some of our front players.
Yeah, this game screams Kovacic for me. Alvarez has done really well in the last couple of games, and I think he's looked good for a break, in that he's looked fresher, I thought. And obviously he kind of helped change the game against United, but this is absolutely not the game for Alvarez. You want someone who's going to kind of hold Rodri's hand. You want someone that's kind of good on the ball, but can also break the lines. And, you know, we've seen, I think the best example for this is, how did Kovacic play against Spurs away? You know, that is one of our toughest games of the season. We've got a shit record there. We are just used to not just losing, but not even scoring. Spurs pressed like idiots. He was the best player on the pitch that day. So I think Kovacic has to play. I think if he doesn't play, I'm going to be really confused, because this is why you bought this guy. It's these kind of games. Liverpool are good in midfield. They've obviously turned it around this season. Endo's kind of had a slow kind of improvement. Obviously, McAllister's brilliant. Szoboszlai's been really good, albeit a bit of an injury asterisk there. You want someone that you can rely on in midfield, and I think it has to be Kovacic.
Yeah, it could be another perfect opportunity for an Alvarez very nice 20-minute cameo or something. It worries me if this game, above all others, will warn me for Alvarez to start in that role. But hey, if Pep does it, he'll have his reasons. But so, Asan, your thoughts on that? The things to pick out is Walker definitely starting when Akanji could. But I think Klopp will look to use pace, will he not? And now Akanji's not one of our slowest players anyway. But Walker makes sense for that reason. And I think his form has picked up. And, you know, we saw how he dealt with Rashford. Ake, I would surely get the nod over Gvardiol, especially as Gvardiol's just coming back from injury. The only other issue, and I saw, of course, let me check your Twitter notes this week. If Doku was completely fit, their right back position probably is the area City would look to focus on as a weak spot, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Would you be tempted to play Doku if he was fit? Or do we really need Kovacic in this game?
So, I actually slightly disagree with Lloyd. I think that if you've watched Liverpool a lot in the last 2 or 3 months, the midfield's been wide open. One of the reasons the opposition teams are getting so many opportunities is because the balance isn't right. McAllister, Endo, and Szoboszlai is not a balanced midfield. Endo is rubbish. With all due respect, he's just not that good. End of conversation. McAllister's a really, really tidy player, and he's very dangerous. But you cut him off, and they've got very little in terms of creative supply. And so I don't know whether defense is the best form of attack in this game, because I can kind of see the argument that, well,
I don't. I don't know, no.
Yeah, I can see the argument for why Kovacic, Rodri, Bernardo, KDB, and Foden, why that almost becomes like a kind of, you know, football-tastic, almost impossible to handle thing from a possession point of view. I think my issue is more going the other way, getting in behind. It's like, how are we approaching chance creation? And so I should preface this by saying, I think Kovacic is going to start. So I think everything I'm about to say is wholly irrelevant. But I think there is an argument to be made, if Doku were fit, or if you like what you saw of Bob on Tuesday, I think there is an argument to be made for, well, Conor Bradley ain't as good as Happy Gilmore, right? And I think that he's a little bit of a touchline hugger. I think he's a little bit of a traditional, physical, fast fullback. And having Oscar Bob pulling narrow is not something he's going to particularly like. Well, something that was really noticeable against Copenhagen was how Bob seemed to drift across the front line rather than being fixed to that left wing position. And I do wonder whether, if they feel that they can cover the left-hand side, that they do think maybe a more attacking option is a better option. Because I'd be perfectly comfortable with the idea of Rodri, Bernardo, and KDB as a midfield three, and then Foden on the right, and I don't care who you pick on the left. You can put Bob there, you can put Doku there, you can put Nunes there. I'm arsed, yeah? It's fine for me. And then play Haaland up top. I'd have no problem with that. I don't have... one of the things that frustrated me a little bit about last season, and one of the things that has frustrated me in general, in particular, about going to Anfield, is when Guardiola plays the ground rather than the opposition in front of him. They have enough analysts to have done the analysis to know where Liverpool are weak. And they do have weaknesses in the midfield and in the back four, which is why they give up as many big chances as they do. And you have to ask yourself what the best way of exploiting those chances is. Do you want to sit deep yourself and go long? In which case, fine, then you can play Kovacic, yeah? But if you want to go football and you want to go keep ball, then I'd be tempted to play Bob.
Lloyd,
do you think Pep's ready to play Bob in a game like this?
I don't think he's far off, yeah.
But that's a no then.
Well,
I think we can agree he's not far off, he's not but started I don't think he'd play him.
He's yeah, not started think. A big Premier League game yet, has he? Yeah. So I think the answer to that question is no, but he's not miles off. And like I say, I wouldn't be like, oh my God, if he's on the team sheet come Sunday 3:45. And I would understand it. And I can see why, as Asan says, particularly if you do drop Bernardo into midfield, who's obviously got a great record against Liverpool and kind of running those games. I could see it, but I actually think for Asan's reasons, which is that I agree that midfield probably is their weakness, even though those three are much better. My point was more, they've obviously turned it around from the slow asses of Hendo and Fabinho, but I think Kovacic can kill them in midfield. That's why I'd play him. I think he can go through them, take the ball past them, and then give it to Phil, give it to Bernardo, give it to Haaland. I think that team, for me, the front six that you went for, Howard, I think that's our best setup for this game and for how Liverpool are going to play. That's why.
The only thing I would concur with all of that, but I've got a question for Howard, and then Lloyd, I want you to answer it as well. I think the only drawback with that team, and I think it's actually a much bigger drawback than we realise, is you're basically asking Phil to play left wing.
Yeah, and I was about to say that.
So. With the best will in the world, are we going to get the best out of Foden by asking him to play left wing, knowing that you're then asking him to cover the Conor Bradley runs as well, and maybe even drop back and help out Ake with Salah in moments? Is that the best use of the skill that Foden's got?
No, it's not. But I think you're a bit short of options in that Grealish is out. Doku's probably not available. You probably don't trust Bob enough yet. Nunes fractured his finger. So
that isn't going to be.
I think it's the best. It's the best setup for the team, even though, you know, we're team Phil and kind of putting Phil first.
Grealish is the only one who would work up and down, yeah, that much to help out with.
Think back to the 2-2. He had an amazing game. We won man of the match playing left wing against Milner that day. He did an amazing job. So,
And he was tracking back in the 90th minute of the derby last week. He was only dispossessing Antony, so I know that don't count for much. But yeah, he can put that shift in, but I wouldn't say it's ideal, but no, I would still say that's the best lineup, the one with Kovacic. We know he's, occasionally he will be moved about. He will drift as well. He may swap with Bernardo even during the match. They may change things around and tweak, and players will move. So it's all very fluid as always. So yeah, I get your point, Asam. It's not perfect, but I still think it's the best option, I think. Just can't see him picking Bob, and I'm not sure he would do any better for the more defensive side of things. I don't know.
As I said at the top, I think that's going to be the team. I think it is going to be Kovacic. I think it will be Phil narrow left. I think it will be Bernardo narrow right. But I think that if you're not going with Walker and Gvardiol effectively as high and wide fullbacks, then I think you are going to end up quite narrow. It's a really interesting. They're always interesting games to analyze tactically and in terms of how both the managers set up. And I dare say Sunday will be no different.
Indeed, I think we've done all the talking we can. I normally ask for score prediction, but should we skip that for game this big? Yeah.
No, I'll give everybody a laugh.
Go on.
3-2 City.
Oh. Take that. It'll be nervy. Well, they can get their two goals in the 97th. Well, yeah. Maybe the ref will just keep playing until they get those two goals. Who knows? But obviously, I'd settle for that. 2-2 for me, maybe. Would you take a draw right now, Lloyd? If I said right now, we draw.
Yes.
Yes.
Me too. I'd snap your hand off for a draw.
What's your prediction?
Better point for us. Much better point for us. I think we can win, you know.
Go on, lad. Go on, lad. Go
on,
lad.
We are the favourites. We are the favourites for this game, by the way.
I think we can do it. No way we keep a clean sheet. I expect a dodgy kind of decision to go against us. Yeah, I think I could see 3-2, but I think probably 2-1. See, I genuinely think we can do it.
Brilliant. Right. Well, that's a perfect way to end the show then. Yeah, no more talk. Let's look forward to Sunday. Hey, Sam, thank you very much.
Thank you, Howard. I've really enjoyed that. I've got Braveheart in me now. Like, let's get to Sunday. Let's have him.
Because I could just see you, yeah, with a Scottish flag painted on you doing that. Some of your rants earlier. So how are you going to distract yourself on Saturday then? Obviously, it's not.
Can I be honest? Probably by having a really bad hangover.
Fair enough. I'm off to see comedian Josh Pugh. And I should say, last time I went to see a comedian before a big match, we won 2-0 at Newcastle, so I'll settle for that. Settle for that score. Lloyd, thank you very much.
Cheers.
Yeah. Have a good weekend.
I will try.
Yes. Right. That is a wrap. Obviously, we'll be back with the review on Monday and tons more content, as always. We're all off to try not to think about football for at least 24 hours by binging on Somebody Feed Phil and Kin episodes before spending Sunday in a pub pre-match rather than lining the streets of Anfield like an absolute weirdo. Have a great weekend, everyone. Stay safe. And as always, Asan.
Up the Blues.